silently, its lights a faint glitter of life amid the darkness, the Imperial Star Destroyer Kimura glided through space, drifting at the boundary between the Outer Rim worlds and the vast regions of unknown space, at the very edge of the Empire. Or rather, at the edge of the pitiful scraps of what had once been the Empire. 1,000 systems left out of an empire that had once spanned 1,000,000. 200 Star Destroyers remaining from a fleet that had once included over 25,000 of them. Standing beside one of the Kimura's side viewports, Admiral Pelion, Supreme Commander of the Imperial Fleet, gazed out at the emptiness, the weight of all too many years and too many defeats pressing across his shoulders. There was a tentative footstep at his side.
"Admiral?" Captain Ardiff said quietly. "We're ready to begin, sir."
For a moment, Pelion's mind flashed back 10 years to a similar moment. Then it had been Pelion and Grand Admiral Thrawn who'd been here on the Kimura's bridge, watching the final test of the prototype cloaking shield Thrawn had recovered from among the Emperor's trophies inside Mount Tentis. Pelion could remember the excitement he'd felt then, as he watched Thrawn single-handedly breathing new life and vigor back into the Empire. But Mount Tentis was gone, destroyed by agents of the New Republic, and the madness and treason of Jorus Siboth, the insane Jedi clone. Grand Admiral Thrawn was dead, and the Empire was dying. With an effort, Pelion shook the shadows of the past away and turned to Ardiff. "Thank you, Captain, at your convenience." Ardiff signaled the attack. 8 Soros sub Preybird-class starfighters in tight formation roared in from behind them, raking the Kimura with low-power blaster fire. Then split smoothly in 8 different directions. Pelion called out to one of the pit crew officers.
"Damage report?
3 starboard turbolaser batteries knocked out. We've also lost 1 tractor beam projector and 2 ion cannon." Pelion almost hesitated to ask the next question.
"Enemy damage?"
"Enemy damage is minimal." Pelion sighed. The finest the Imperial fleet had to offer. They ran through the exercise one more time, this time activating the cloaking shield and turning the firing control over to the newly designed predictor. Blinded by the very device that was now shielding it from its opponent's view, the Kimura fired wildly in an attempt to destroy its opponents. Or perhaps not quite so wildly. If the predictor worked as well as its designers hoped, perhaps the Empire still had a chance in this war. It was a long time before the Kimura's turbo lasers finally ceased fire. Far too long. Pelion glanced at Ardiff.
"Is that it?"
"Yes, sir. 500 shots as pre-programmed."
Pelion nodded.
"Deactivate cloaking shield. Let's see how well we did."
Mentally crossing his fingers, Pelion peered out the viewport. The comm officer called out the results.
"Signal from adversary commander, Admiral. Target 3 reports receiving a disabling hit and has gone dormant. All other targets have sustained only minimal damage."
Pelion grimaced. 1. Out of 8 targets, the Kimura had been able to hit exactly 1, and that great feat had required 500 shots to achieve. The computerized combat predictor, touted by its creators and sponsors as the best approach to practical use of the cloaking shield, had been put to the test, and had done only marginally better than simple random shooting. Pelion turned to Ardiff.
"It's over, Captain. Have the navigator plot a course for the Bastion system. Send transmissions to all the Moffs, instructing them to meet me at Moff Dizra's palace."
"Yes, Admiral."
Ardiff paused.
"May I tell the Moffs what the meeting is about?"
Pelion looked out the viewport at the distant stars.
"Tell them it's time to send an emissary to the New Republic to discuss the terms of our surrender."
The Millennium Falcon's console gave a final proximity beep, jolting Han Solo out of a light doze. He stretched tired muscles and glanced at the displays. Then he gave the Wookiee beside him a couple of quick slaps with the back of his fingertips.
"Come on, Chewie, look alive."
Han eyed the hundreds of tiny drive glows moving around the planet like some crazy Moultrial dance.
Yeah, well, it's always crowded around Iphigen. Main transfer point for this sector and at least two others. Probably why Puffers set up the meeting for here. You don't start shooting if some of your own stuff might get in the way.
Well, excuse me. President Gavrison, then. Didn't know you were such a big fan.
Slapping a massive hand at the comm switch, Chewbacca acknowledged the transmission. Luke Skywalker's voice came over the speaker.
Hey, Chewie, you're right on schedule. The Falcon must be running smoothly for a change. When your call came, we just hopped in the old snub fighter and headed out. What's this all about?
Han answered sourly.
What's it always about at this end of the core? The Diamala and Aishuri are at it again.
The Diamala don't like having to rely on local patrol ships when they're coming into Aishuri ports. The Aishuri don't want armed Diamala ships coming into their systems.
Luke asked,
Gavrison asked you to arbitrate?
Han pursed his lips.
Well, not exactly. He kind of thinks Leia's here with us.
Ah.
Look, Luke, I am official liaison to the Independent Shippers Association. It's not like I haven't done this sort of thing before. Leia's on a leave of absence from her political office, and she hasn't had any real vacation in a long time. She and the kids are on Wayland. Which, by the way, isn't like it was when we were tromping through the forest on the way to Mount Tantus. Not with all the Nogri who settled there.
I'll take your word for it, Han. So what can I do to help?
Han leaned back.
I've got a plan all worked out. You know how Diamala get when they think all icy, calm, and unemotional, right? Kind of like your deep Jedi stuff. So, you can talk to their delegation. The Aishuri can't discuss anything without getting all worked up and screaming their heads off at each other. So Chewie will talk to their group. Then the three of us get together, come up with a fix, and we're done.
It took Luke 2 hours to realize that the talks were getting nowhere. It was another hour before Han came to the same conclusion. They met privately in Luke's suite, but before they could agree on what to do, there was a trill from the table console. Luke keyed the switch. Skywalker? On the hologram pad, the quarter-sized image of a young Iphigeni appeared, his braided lip beard not quite covering the throat insignia of the Iphigen Spaceport Directorate.
I apologize for disturbing your deliberations, Jedi Skywalker, but we've received notification from New Republic Commerce that a Sarkhan freighter is on its way here under a Customs Red alert.
Luke looked at Han. Customs Red? A warning that there was illegal and highly dangerous cargo aboard. Did Commerce identify the captain and crew?
No. Therefore, we have dispatched the bulk of our inner-system customs frigates and patrol craft to intercept. It was thought that, as New Republic representatives, you and Captain Solo might wish to observe the procedure.
Han sat forward. And you're sure it's a Sarkhan?
The ship is a Corellian Action Kane 12, rarely seen in this part of the core except under Sarkhan authority.
It sounds like a Sarkhan, all right.
Han agreed, a bit too casually.
You go ahead, do your intercept. Maybe we'll come up later and have a look.
Thank you, Captain Solo, and farewell.
The hologram vanished.
Han muttered as he stood. That's no smuggler. We've got pirates on the way.
Pirates? Luke blinked. I didn't think pirate gangs operated this far into the core.
It's an old trick. You call an alert on some ship coming in sunside, then hit a nightside target while customs is busy half a planet away. The only tricky part is making sure the ground and orbit defenses can't get to you. Come on, let's go.
Shouldn't we alert the Iphigeni first? Luke asked, reaching for the comm.
We can't, Han said. The pirates probably have a spotter already here. Any sign of an alert and they'll just call off the raid. We'll end up looking stupid. And the Diamalan opinion of the New Republic will sink a little deeper. The High Council will have my hide if that happens.
Luke shrugged.
All right, I'm in, he said, pulling out his comlink.
R2?
Hearing R2's warning, Luke peered out the X-Wing's canopy, trying to shake his own nagging doubts. Just keep an eye out, R2. We'll be fine. In the past few weeks, a strange restlessness had been simmering and growing in Luke, and now it had surfaced again. He'd talked to Leia about it, but the best she'd been able to do was suggest that it was some kind of subconscious prodding from the Force. Something Luke was supposed to do, she hypothesized. Or perhaps something he wasn't supposed to do. Luke shook his thoughts back to the task at hand. And then suddenly, the pirate ships were there. Dropping in from light speed were no fewer than 8 ships, all unmarked, all bristling with turbo laser batteries. R2, give me a readout. A list appeared on Luke's sensor scope. 2 mangled-looking Corellian gunships, an old but impressive Kaloth battlecruiser with an equally old KDY A4 ion cannon welded awkwardly to its bow, and 5 Corsair-class assault starfighters. The whole group was in encirclement formation, closing on a pair of medium transports a few kilometers ahead. Transports bearing New Republic insignia. Han spoke again.
Luke, run me some cover. First thing is to take out that ion cannon.
Go ahead. I'm right behind you. It was abundantly clear that a sudden attack from outside their encirclement ring was the last thing the pirate ships were expecting. The Falcon shot between 2 of the Corsairs without drawing any fire at all until it was well past them. They got a single ineffective turbo laser salvo off before Luke slid in behind them, dropping a proton torpedo into their drive sections. A brilliant double flash, and they were out of the fight. The battlecruiser started to turn its turrets toward them. Luke threw the X-Wing into a stomach-twisting spiral away from the battlecruiser, just as 2 of the 3 remaining Corsairs shot past. Han, you okay?
Sure. I got the ion cannon, but it got a shot off at one of the transports first. Don't know if they're disabled or not. You?
No problems yet. These Corsairs are better armored than TIE fighters, but they're not nearly as maneuverable. The words were barely out of Luke's mouth when he nearly had to eat them. Abruptly, the Corsair in front of him cut sharply to starboard, twisting out of his line of fire, and tried to swing in behind him. Clenching his teeth, Luke matched the maneuver. And for a few seconds, they chased each other around in a tight circle, each trying for a clear shot. Luke won by a single heartbeat, and the Corsair flashed into flame and debris. In the near distance, he could see the battlecruiser firing furiously as the much smaller Falcon skimmed like a sting fly across its hull, systematically taking out turbo laser emplacements as it went. To one side, the 2 gunships were exchanging fire with the New Republic transports. The rest of the freighter traffic was understandably vacating the area as fast as it could. Luke focused on the battlecruiser. He could sense something strange about the big ship, a strangeness he hadn't felt for a long time. Luke shook the feeling away. The 2 Corsairs were coming in fast. Here's the plan, R2. On my signal, run full power to the top starboard engine and to both port side braking vents. After 4 seconds, cut the vents and throw half power to all engines. Got it? Resting his thumbs on the proton torpedo triggers, Luke watched the Corsair streaking toward him, stretching out through the Force to touch the minds of the 2 crews, to watch the texture of their thoughts. Holding course, he waited. Now! R2's warble was swallowed up by the sudden roar of the drive. A second later, the X-Wing was spinning wildly around its center of mass. Eyes half closed, Luke let the Force guide the timing of his shot. And then he was jammed back into his seat as the X-Wing straightened out of its spin and took off on a new trajectory. Blinking against his dizziness, Luke looked around for the Corsairs. The gambit had worked. Concentrating on the X-Wing's spin, trying to anticipate the direction he would take when he popped out of it, they'd probably never even noticed the incoming proton torpedoes until it was too late. Han's voice came over the comm.
Looks like they're pulling out.
Luke brought the X-Wing around again. The battlecruiser was driving for deep space, the 2 gunships right behind them. He switched his comm control to an official New Republic frequency. Transport, this is New Republic X-Wing AA-589. What's your situation?
Looking a lot better than it was. Thanks for the assist.
the transports turn back towards Iphigen. Stretching out with the force, Luke brought back the odd sensation he picked up from the battlecruiser. And then it clicked into place. He keyed his comlink. Han, I think there were clones aboard that battlecruiser. For a long moment, the comm was silent.
You sure?
The sense was the same one I got when we were chasing Grand Admiral Thrawn's clone warriors around the Katana. Han hissed thoughtfully into the comm.
Terrific. I wonder where the Empire's been hiding clones for the past 10 years. Look, let's finish up here and then turn intelligence loose on it.
I was under the impression that intelligence wasn't having much luck pinning down these pirate gangs. Han answered reluctantly.
They're not. Neither are my contacts with the independent shippers.
Luke eased into escort formation beside the transports.
Sounds like we need someone better connected with the Fringe. Someone like Talon Card, for example.
For a moment, Leia Organa Solo just stood there, the restless breezes of the Wayland Forest rustling her hair. She stared at the gold protocol droid twitching nervously in front of her.
Han did what?
Nervously, C-3PO tried to explain. He and Chewbacca have gone to Iphigen, Your Highness. I tried to stop them, but he wouldn't listen. Please don't deactivate me.
Leia took a careful breath, stretching out to the Force to calm herself.
Oh, one other thing, Your Highness. Captain Solo made a call to Master Luke before he and Chewbacca left.
Leia smiled wryly. She should have guessed that Han hadn't just rushed into this thing alone.
It's all right, 3PO. Once Han gets an idea in his head, there's no stopping him. He and Luke should be able to handle things.
The droid seemed to wilt with relief.
Thank you, Your Highness.
Leia turned away and looked back across the clearing. Her youngest son, Anakin, was crouched down beside one of the slender airspeeders they had just arrived in, and even at this distance she could hear the mix of seriousness and excitement in the 8-year-old's voice as he discussed the finer points of design with the Nogri pilot. Standing beside the Mobquet speeder bikes which had flown escort for them, the twins, Jason and Jaina, were watching with the air of stressed patience that came of being a whole year and a half older and wiser than their brother. Grouped around the children and vehicles were the short gray figures of their Nogri escort, the bulk of their attention directed outward. Even here at the edge of a Nogri settlement, they were continually on the alert for danger. Beyond them, rising above the forest, Leia could see the top of Mount Tantis.
Welcome back, Lady Vader.
A gravelly Nogri mew came from beside Leia. Only long experience and her strength of calmness in the Force kept Leia from jumping with surprise. Even when they weren't trying to be quiet, Nogri were next to impossible to hear. One of the many reasons Grand Admiral Thrawn and Darth Vader before him had so coveted their services as private death commandos for the Empire. Had coveted that service so much, in fact, that they deliberately destroyed the Nogri homeworld of Hunagar, keeping the Nogri on the edge of disaster, carefully structured to trap them in eternal servitude. Leia had helped the Nogri discover the Empire's deceit, and that knowledge had brought them firmly onto the side of the New Republic. Leia addressed the Nogri with appropriate formality.
I greet you, Kachmim, Clan Eichmir. I trust all is well?
Kachmim gave her the Nogri bow of respect.
All is well and quiet. With perhaps one small exception, I hesitate to involve you, Lady Vader. You came here for relaxation, not to settle disputes. Further, I would dislike to take you away from your first sons and first daughter.
Leia glanced back at the group. The children are doing fine, right where they are. Tell me about this dispute. The Nogri clan center consisted of a single large room roofed with heavy wooden beams, with walls on which the history and genealogy of the settlement had begun to be carved. 2/3 of the way back was the throne-like high seat, the only chair in the room. And seated on the floor at the foot of the high seat, dressed in dirt-stained clothing, was a Deveronian. He favored Kakmem with a thin smile as he got to his feet.
Ah, my kindly host. I hope you brought food. I am beginning to get hungry.
He shifted his attention to Leia.
And you, I take it, are the wandering decision-maker I was promised?
Kakhmem's voice was edged with knives.
This is New Republic High Councillor Leia Organa Solo. You will speak to her with respect.
The Deveronian touched the rightmost of his two forehead horns with his fingertips.
Of course. I would never speak otherwise to an official of the New Republic.
Of course not.
Leia matched his tone.
The Deveronian continued,
I am Lakjit Councillor, a simple seeker of knowledge and truth.
Kakhmem's gaze was hard on him.
This alien was discovered near Mount Tantis by one of the cleansing teams. He had been digging through soil in the fault line area and had found 6 data cards. When the team attempted to take them from him, he claimed possession under the Debel Agreement.
Really?
Leia eyed the Deveronian with new interest. The Debel Agreement was a compromise deal she'd worked out between the Nogri cleansing teams, who had sworn to eradicate every memory of the Emperor's presence on Wayland, and Garv Debel, a New Republic archaeologist, who had insisted that items plundered from other worlds should be returned to their proper owners. The agreement had been informal and reasonably private, hardly something a casual treasure hunter would know about. Leia turned to the Deveronian.
Tell me, Lakjit, how did you come to know about the Debel Agreement?
Counselor, I am associated with a human who I believe has had some dealings with the New Republic. Talon Card.
I see.
Leia kept her voice and face expressionless. To say that Talon Card had had dealings with the New Republic was to vastly understate the case. Smuggler chief and information broker with an organization that stretched across the known galaxy, Card had reluctantly thrown in with the New Republic during the massive Imperial counteroffensive led by Grand Admiral Thrawn. More than that, he'd put together an unlikely coalition of fellow smugglers, who had played a significant role in stopping Thrawn's advance and ultimately defeating him. The coalition had drifted apart over the years, but Leia had made an effort to keep in touch with Card. Lakjit gave her another thin smile.
Counselor Organa Solo, it should be clear that historical data cards are precisely the sort of thing the Debel Agreement was created to protect. Therefore,
Kakhmem interrupted.
We have only your statement that the data cards are historical. We must study them ourselves.
Leia thought quickly. That kind of study could take hours, and the children were waiting.
Here's the offer, Lakjit. I'll take the data cards, paying you 500 now as earnest credits. After I've examined them, the New Republic will pay you whatever they're worth.
And if I refuse?
Leia nodded toward Kakhmem.
Would you prefer I let the Nogri set the price?
Lakjit grimaced.
I seem to have no alternative. Since you have not brought me food, would you and your hosts object if I went and foraged while you work?
Leia cut him off. She hadn't realized Deveronians foraged for food, and she certainly wasn't interested in the details.
Yes, go.
When Lakjit had left, she brushed at the dirt covering the data cards and peered at the labels. The first two seemed of little importance, but the third... A sudden chill ran through her as she stared at the label. The Hand of Thrawn. Pulling her data pad from her pouch, she slid the data card in. Kakhmem was behind her.
What does it say?
Leia shook her head. Nothing. At least, nothing legible. She tried a different section of the card, then another. Looks like the whole data card has been scrambled. Maybe the experts at Coruscant can... She broke off. Through the Force, she caught a sudden flash of fright from her children. It's Lakjit! She had an image of the Deveronian charging through a cloud of billowing white smoke. Kakhmem! But Kakhmem was already through the door, screaming the alert in the warbling Nogri combat code. Jamming the datapad and data cards back into her hip pack, Leia cleared the doorway just as an answer trilled through the trees. Kakhmem's tone was icy with grim relief.
They are unharmed. The Deveronian has stolen the speeder bike.
Most of the smoke had dissipated by the time they reached the clearing a minute later. The Nogri pressed in a tight defensive circle around the children. Kabara, what happened? The Nogri's face was set in the quiet agony of a warrior who has failed his duty.
He surprised us, Lady Veda. He walked casually into the clearing and dropped his digging tool onto the ground between us. Part of the handle was a disguised smoke grenade which exploded with the impact. We could hear him as he activated one of the speeder bikes.
Suddenly, with the clear vision of hindsight, the whole deception was obvious to Leia. Pulling the Deveronian's data cards out, she fanned them in her hands. All of them had dirty edges. On one, though, it was only the edges that were dirty. She turned back to Kachmim and Kabarak. The Deveronian is undoubtedly using the stolen speeder to get to a hidden ship. We must find him. He's still got one of the data cards. 30 seconds later, the group was airborne, Leia riding with Kabarak as they headed for the northern side of Mount Tantis. Kabarak shouted,
"Hold on!"
And the airspeeder curved sharply around to the left as a Jimsnor II freighter appeared above the trees. Half closing her eyes, Leia stretched out through the forest toward the freighter, finally catching the Deveronian's presence.
"That's him," she confirmed.
Even with the airspeeders running full throttle, the Jimsnor was steadily pulling away from its pursuers. Ahead of it, there were no obstacles of any sort that would slow it down. Already, it was above the airspeeder's maximum height limit. A few minutes more, and it would be leaving them behind. Suddenly, with a terrific roar, a spaceship shot past them, heading straight for the Jimsnor. Leia winced as the airspeeder bucked in the other ship's slipstream.
"Kabarak!"
"It's all right, Lady Veda. It is an ally."
"An ally?"
Leia frowned at the newcomer. A Corellian Action 6 bulk freighter, by the looks of it. If the rate it was closing on the Deveronian was any indication, it had undergone a substantial engine upgrade. Lockjit had apparently come to a similar conclusion. Banking hard to the right, he dipped back down toward the trees, then cut sharply up and around, settling into a new vector, and clawing hard for space. Almost before he had begun his turn, the Action 6 was moving to counter, and by the time the Jimsnor had straightened out, the larger ship was back on top of him, forcing him to abandon his climb or risk a mid-air collision. Slowly but inexorably, the Deveronian was being forced down. As Leia watched, Kabarak turned to her.
"This is the wild card, with your allies Talon Card and Mara Jade aboard."
He eyed her almost furtively.
"I trust you are not displeased."
Leia smiled tightly. Talon Card, Gentile Smuggler Chief, one-time ally of the New Republic, considered untrustworthy by the majority of the High Council. Mara Jade, former agent of the Emperor, Card's second in command, and aside from Leia herself, Luke's first attempt at teaching the ways of the Force. Also considered untrustworthy. "No, Kabarak, I'm not displeased at all. Like the Nogri, I too remember the past." The Jimsnor squatted in the clearing, canted slightly to one side on a crumpled landing skid, its hatchway open and surrounded by a group of Nogri. Leia turned to Talon Card. "I wouldn't have believed you could force a ship down like that, not without wrecking half of it in the process." Card shrugged modestly.
"We do try to please."
"And you generally do," Leia agreed. "What are you doing here, anyway?"
"Business. I've been experimenting with hiring Nogri to protect my contact people in some of the more dangerous or unsavory parts of the galaxy."
Leia frowned. "I hadn't heard anything about this."
"We've been keeping it quiet. I'm not exactly welcome on Coruscant these days. And given your close ties with the Nogri, we didn't want your reputation and influence damaged by association."
"I appreciate your concern, Talon, but I can take care of my own reputation, thank you. And as far as New Republic hospitality goes, there are still quite a few of us who haven't forgotten your part in stopping Grand Admiral Thrawn." An uncharacteristic touch of bitterness seeped into Card's voice.
"I don't think any of the High Councilors or Senators have actually forgotten. The point is that many of them resented my organization's assistance, even at the time we were providing it."
Leia had been aware that official ties between Card's smuggler friends and the New Republic had been growing more and more distant over the past few years, but she hadn't realized he felt this strongly about it.
I'm sorry, what can I do to help?
He waved the offer away.
Smugglers are part of the fringe, just like mercenaries and con men and pirates. Try to defend us, and all you'll accomplish will be to get muddied alongside us.
Besides which, Card continued quietly, drawing any attention to me at this point would also put the Nogri at risk. Or don't you think some in the High Council would consider Nogri hiring themselves out to a smuggler to be unacceptable activity? Leia grimaced. But he was right. And with the Nogri still under their self-imposed cloud of penance for their years of service to the Empire, the clan dynasts would be extremely sensitive to any such charges. Leia looked back at the freighter. A new group had exited the hatchway. Three Nogri, a sullen-looking Lockjit, and Mara Jade, her red-gold hair glistening in the sunlight. In her hand was a dirty data card. With a little persistence, Card got the Deveronian to admit that he had been on his way to sell the data card to someone who had promised to pay much more for it than Leia.
And who are these generous people? Card asked.
Lockjit twitched his horns.
You'll know as soon as you read it.
Card turned to Mara.
You've checked his entire ship?
The Nogri are still poking around, but this is definitely the card, Mara said.
All right.
Card looked back at the Deveronian.
As soon as they're finished, you can leave.
As always, a most generous master,
Lockjit said, with not quite enough sarcasm in his tone to take offense at. Then he bowed and headed back toward his ship, three Nogri trailing along with him. Card handed Leia the data card.
We have facilities for cleaning it aboard the Wild Card, if you'd care to avail yourself of them.
Which would allow you a chance to read it over my shoulder, Leia suggested dryly. Card smiled.
We could consider it my fee.
The last readable page scrolled across the display a second time, giving way to ruined sections of the data card. Carefully, Leia set the data pad down on Card's desk, her heart pounding. Card, seated in the high-backed chair on the other side of the desk, reached over and swiveled the data pad around to face him.
Well, he said, at least we now know why our Bothan friend Felia was so anxious that Mount Tantus be thoroughly destroyed.
Leia didn't answer, that scene from 10 years earlier flashing back to mind. The Bothan counselor Boris Kvelia, standing outside the Wild Card in the Imperial City on Coruscant, all but pleading with Card to fly Leia to Wayland to help Han and the others destroy the Emperor's Mount Tantus storehouse, warning darkly that there were things in that storehouse which, if found, could bring disaster to the Bothan people and the galaxy. Lockjit had found it. And Felia had been right.
It's hard to believe anything about Kamis could have been kept secret, Card said.
Leia nodded mechanically. The destruction of Kamis had happened before her time, but the pictures were as vivid as if she'd witnessed it in person. The Kamasi had been a good and noble people, with an artistic bent and a gentle wisdom that had won them deep respect even among their adversaries. Their unwavering belief in peace through moral strength had been a strong influence on the political philosophies of many worlds, including Alderaan. While their firm support of the principles of the Old Republic had made them a rallying point during the political chaos of that era. It was still not known who the attackers were who had come out of nowhere to systematically and ruthlessly burn off the planet. None of the Kamasi's political opponents had claimed responsibility. Indeed, all of them had joined in the universal condemnation. But with Lockjit's data card, at least one piece of the puzzle had now been solved. The office door slid open. Mara came in and sat down next to Leia. The alert's out, she said. All our ships and ground stations, and I got word to Mazik's and Klingon's people, too. If Lockjit gets near any of them, we'll have him. Card turned to Mara.
You wouldn't happen to have any information on Kamis, would you?
She threw him a cool look. You mean like the names and clans of the Bothans who sabotaged Kamis's planetary shield generators? Don't forget, Kamus was long gone by the time the Emperor found me and trained me to be his hand. Leia asked, he never mentioned the attack, bragged or gloated about it, anything? Mara shook her head. Not to me. Card eyed Leia closely.
Kachmem said Lakshit found 6 data carts. Was there anything of this magnitude on any of the others?
Leia started to answer mechanically.
There was one that might be...
A sudden thought jabbed her like a blade. Mara Jade, once a secret and powerful agent of the Emperor, known only as the Emperor's Hand. She turned to look at Mara, found those brilliant green eyes gazing with equal intensity back at her. The Emperor's Hand? The Hand of Thrawn. Mara might already know who or what was meant by the Hand of Thrawn. But Leia couldn't ask her. This was something the High Council of the New Republic should hear about first. She shook her head. I can't say anything about it, not yet.
Pellion laid it out for the Moffs in complete and painful detail, and when he had finished, they were, as he'd expected, outraged. Moff Andre's voice was icy.
You must be joking, Admiral Pellion.
Moff Bimos fingered the massive Corderon ring on his finger.
I agree. The Empire does not surrender.
Pellion answered bluntly. Then the Empire dies. With a negotiated peace treaty, we can at least... Moff Hort pushed back his chair.
I've heard enough. I have important business waiting for me back at my sector.
As do I.
Moff Quillen stood up with him.
Sit down,
a quiet voice ordered.
Both of you.
Pellion focused on the man who'd spoken. He was short and slender, with receding silver hair, piercing yellow-flecked blue eyes, and claw-like hands. His face was lined with age and bitterness, his mouth twisted with cruelty and smoldering ambition. He was Moff Dizra, chief administrator of Braxton's sector, ruler of the new imperial capital planet codenamed Bastion, and their host here in the conference room of his palace. And of the 8 remaining Moffs, the one Pellion trusted least.
Thank you.
Dizra shifted his gaze to Pellion.
Please continue, Admiral.
Thank you, Your Excellency.
Pellion looked around the table.
I don't make my recommendation lightly, but I see no other way. With a negotiated treaty, we can at least hold on to the territory we still have. Without one, we will certainly be destroyed.
The debate ran on for another hour. In the end, showing the same deep reluctance Pellion himself felt, they agreed with his assessment of the situation. Pellion explained that according to intelligence reports, General Bel Iblis of the New Republic fleet would be arriving at the Morishim starfighter base in 2 weeks. Pellion would send an emissary to the Morishim sector to announce the Empire's surrender and to arrange a rendezvous with Admiral Pellion for peace treaty negotiations. After the meeting, Pellion visited Moff Dizra in his private office, which was furnished in the kind of luxury Pellion hadn't seen in a Moff's palace since the height of the Empire's power. Dizra was seated at a glassy white desk in the center of the room. A young military aide with short-cropped dark hair and a major's insignia standing behind him. Dizra scowled when Pellion entered the room.
Surrendering to Bel Iblis is, for some reason, more palatable than humiliating yourself before anyone else of that rabble?
The aide cleared his throat.
If you'll excuse me, Your Excellency,
he turned to go. Dizra held up a hand to stop him.
No, stay, Major. I'd like you to hear this. You know my aide, Admiral, don't you? Major Groton Tierce?
Pellion glanced at Tierce, but continued to address Dizra.
I'm still open to suggestions, Your Excellency.
Dizra did not attempt to hide his scorn.
You already know my suggestions, Admiral. To send in teams to help foment the rising tide of interplanetary and intersector conflict within the New Republic. To plant forces where they'll be able to take full advantage of such clashes. To expand our military forces wherever we can, using whatever means are available.
Pellion felt his lip twist. They'd been over this same ground time and again.
We are the Imperial Fleet. We do not hire mercenaries and pirate gangs from the fringe to fight our battles.
I suggest you reread your history, Admiral.
Dizra flicked his fingers impatiently.
The Empire has always made use of such scum. Even the Lord Darth Vader himself hired them when it suited his purposes. Don't come all over sanctimonious with me. I'm quite busy, Admiral. Was there something you wanted?
Pelion made a supreme effort to hold on to his temper. I wanted to talk to you about those Soros sub-prey birds you've been supplying to the fleet.
Dizra leaned back in his chair. Yes, excellent little starfighters, aren't they?
Adequate enough that I wondered why we hadn't seen more of them over the years. So I did some checking. It turns out that Soros Sub never really got the Preybird project going, but wound up shutting down the line after only a few production models. Which leads to an interesting question. Where are you getting them from?
Dizra's eyes flashed. A group of private investors bought up the Preybird production line and restarted it. I have a business agreement with them.
Their names and systems?
It's a group of private investors.
I don't care. I want their names, their home systems, and their corporate connections. And the means you're using to finance this deal.
Dizra drew himself up. Are you suggesting there's something improper about any of this?
No, of course not.
Pointedly, Pelion let his gaze sweep across the room.
Certainly, a man of your obvious means has access to a great number of financial resources. I merely wish to make sure the entire Empire is benefiting from the deal.
Pelion had expected Dizra to take offense at that, but the Moth merely smiled mysteriously.
Rest assured, Admiral, the entire Empire will indeed benefit.
After the double doors closed behind Pelion, Dizra swiveled his chair around and peered up at Major Tierce.
Interesting conversation, wouldn't you say, Major? Tell me, what were your impressions?
Tierce spoke with the humility appropriate to someone of his rank.
I'm sorry, Your Excellency. I'm just a fleet adjutant. I don't know much about these political things.
Dizra reached down to the side of the desk to touch a personal-coded switch grown into the ivory. A drawer hidden in the writing surface slid open.
You disappoint me, Major.
Dizra's fingers riffled through half a dozen data cards, his eyes steady on Tierce's face.
I would have assumed the Emperor would have insisted on only the best.
Tierce's eyes narrowed. But he wasn't ready yet to give up the charade.
The Emperor, Your Excellency?
Dizra selected one of the data cards and held it up.
To serve in his royal guard.
Tierce exhaled softly.
I suppose there's no point in making loud noises of protest, is there?
He straightened. And suddenly, the diffident and marginally competent Major Tierce, who'd served as Dizra's military aide for 8 months, was gone.
In his place stood a warrior. How did you identify me?
It took Dizra a moment to find his voice.
I did a search of the main Imperial Records Library after it was moved here to Bastion. Duplicates of the Emperor's private records are also stored there. I was able to access them.
Tierce lifted an eyebrow.
Well, what now?
Not what you're expecting. I have no intention of denouncing you as a deserter or whatever it is you're worried about. You were on the Kamara?
Of course. What better place for a royal guardsman than at the side of a Grand Admiral?
Ah,
Dizra nodded, a stray bit of history from that battle falling into place.
So it was your unit that intercepted and killed the Nogri traitor Rook after he murdered the Grand Admiral.
Yes, for what cold comfort that was.
Dizra abruptly returned the conversation to the present.
The past is past, Major. Let us now consider the future.
You heard my suggestions to Admiral Pelion. What do you think?
Tierce shook his head. The Admiral is right. It won't work. The numbers are too heavily slanted against us.
Not even with the New Republic busy with dozens of internal conflicts?
No.
Tierce gestured at Dizra's desk.
Not even with the interesting report filed under Lockjit on the third data card down.
Dizra frowned, pulling out the data card from the stack Tierce had brought in.
All these reports were encrypted with a special Imperial code reserved for top intelligence officers and the muffs themselves. Obviously, Dizra wasn't the only one who'd been doing some high-level slicing. Sliding the data card into his reader, Dizra skimmed the intelligence report purchased from a Deveronian freelancer named Lakchit. He glanced at Tyrs.
This is perfect. Exactly what we need. A flashpoint like Kamas, especially with Bothan involvement, will bring things to a boil. Particularly if we give it the proper nudge. Would you be willing to join us?
Tyrs eyed him.
Who is this us you refer to?
If you join, Tyrs, there would be three of us who could bring the entire fleet onto our side. I would be the political power behind the throne, plus the supplier of military men and materiel, of course.
Tyrs regarded him levelly. From the Braxan sector fleet?
And other sources? You, should you choose to join us, would serve as the architect of our overall strategy.
I see. And the third person?
Dizra pushed his chair back and stood up.
I'll show you.